Меня зовут Дмитрий Киселев, журналист.
Им нужно запретить донорство крови, спермы.
А их сердца... Оппозиция кричит на Майдане. Украина – это Европа. Ранний секс – норма. Начинают с 9.
Задача журналиста, на мой взгляд, это показ верных пропорций мира.
He said that gays and lesbians should be prohibited from donating blood or sperm, and that their hearts should be buried or burned. He said the protesters in Ukraine survive on warm lard and accused them of using, quote, quote, ancient African military techniques against police. He's claimed that children in Sweden have, quote, early sex from the age of 9, and that this represents the height of European values. And he said all these things on the air. Meet Dmitry Kiselyov, the Kremlin's new top journalist and Vladimir Putin's new propagandist. Kiselyov burst into the headlines this week when Putin dissolved the venerable news agency RIA Novosti, which is widely seen as the most impartial of Russia's state-run media, and folded into a massive new media conglomerate called Rossiya Sovodnya. Heading Rossiya Sovodnya will be none other than Kiselyov, who has long used the weekly news program he anchors, Vesti Nedeli, as a vehicle to promote some of the Kremlin's most contentious policies, as well as to bludgeon, ridicule, and deride the West. It looks like the Kremlin has decided to dial up the agitprop, perhaps to absurd levels, but to what ends? Hello from our studios in Prague, and welcome to the Power Vertical Podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. It's Friday the 13th, but I ain't scared. Why not? Well, because joining me on the Skype line from London is co-host Kirill Kobrin, editor of the Moscow-based history and sociology magazine NZ. Welcome, Kirill.
Hello.
And also joining us via Skype from New York City is special guest Nina Khrushcheva, professor of international affairs at the New School, whose new book, The Lost Khrushchev, A Family Journey into the Gulag of the Russian Mind, will be out next spring. Welcome back, Nina.
Thank you.
Back in 2007, I wrote the following to describe the Kremlin's agitprop machine, which at the time was resurgent and very, very effective. Quote, "This is not your father's Soviet propaganda machine. Gone are the presenters in boxy gray suits, the monotone cadence and poor production value that characterize communist-era news broadcasts. Such an approach would fall flat in today's Russia, where an increasing number of people are plugged into the global media culture," end quote. Kiselyov, I would add, was part of that well-oiled media machine that I was describing there. Now, let's fast forward 6 years to now. And the following question comes to mind. Is Kiselyov as out of date today in the age of Dosh TV, Live Journal, and Twitter as those old Soviet news anchors in their boxy suits would have been back in 2007? Or conversely, is this a masterstroke by the Kremlin and we're just not seeing the genius of this move? Nina, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think we are seeing the genius of this move. We just don't think it's a genius move because it is... as often Putin does with his decisions, he takes Russia back rather than taking it forward. And in 2007, before his second term ended, there was still a hope that, hope is a strong word, but there's still a possibility that he would in fact sort of at least try to balance between his Western aspirations, being from St. Petersburg and all, and what traditionally Russia is, that it decides or declares that it has its own set of values, which is very anti-Western, and just run with it. So he just decided to run with it. And I think the nomination of Kiselyov or putting Kiselyov as a... now that the chief Russian, I wanted to say Soviet propagandist, is just one of those moves. And in fact, I was, I think we're going to talk about it later, Putin's address to the nation.
Yeah,
and,
which is another piece of this puzzle.
So another thing on Thursday that did happen, and I was actually watching very carefully those who attended and listening, and they looked very Soviet to me. Brown suits are deeply out of fashion, and yet some of them were in brown suits, so they was going back to the 70s, 80s, Brezhnev, and even further than that. So it doesn't surprise me, because this Kremlin is increasingly paddling backwards into the 20th century, 17th century, and so on.
Well, what about in terms of effectiveness? This new, I mean, some have dubbed it the new Ministry of Truth, this new Rossiya Sovodnya conglomerate that's going to fold in Voice of Russia, the RT television station, if I'm not mistaken, and RIA Novosti into this big state-controlled media conglomerate. In doing this, I mean, RIA Novosti was by far the best of a bad lot of Russian state media, and actually at times it was quite good. If you read, I mean, I was reading RIA Novosti covering the news of its own demise, and I don't have the quote in front of me, but it could have been, you know, the context graph from the New York Times basically said the move represents a further tightening of state control over Russia, over the already tightly controlled Russian media, or something to that effect. That was RIA Novosti writing that. Is this going to be effective in today's media, into today's social environment? Isn't Russia getting a little bit too sophisticated for this kind of a thing?
Well, I think it does. And that's sort of that combination that Putin is trying to create, that Frankenstein monster that ultimately is going to destroy itself, is exactly what Putin's miscalculations are, because he thinks that centralizing and unifying the way, once again, the Soviet monolith was doing it is the way to the future, because the world is too fragmented and you really have to control it. But, you know, truth is that this fake modernization that has been proposed many times by Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev suggests quite the opposite, is that you actually really need to diversify in order to succeed. And the fact that Putin, okay, let's say another 5 years he can hold on to this monolith, but ultimately then it's going to collapse in a much, much louder noise and a much greater tragedy, which unfortunately, being the man of the past, and not even the man of the present anymore, he really does not understand.
Kirill, what are your thoughts? Will Kislyov's Rossiya Sovodnya, this new Ministry of Truth, be effective in the age of Dosh TV and Twitter and so on?
I'll begin with a, you know, sort of a Buddhist statement.
I knew you were going to begin with a Buddhist statement. What something told me when I got into the studio today that you were going to begin with a Buddhist statement.
Yes, today is 13th Friday. Everything is an illusion when we're discussing, you know, this particular issue. Of course, RIA Novosti is not Ministry of Truth.
Not RIA Novosti, Rossiya Sovodnya.
And could Rossiya Sovodnya. And it couldn't be, because we don't know what audience, what sort of audience it will, you know, have. So initially, all this media company had a purpose or aim to become a manufacturer of the, you know, a sort of image of Russia for outside consumption. And still is. Don't forget about this. Because the main aim of, you know, all this Putin's move around RIA Novosti and so on is to make Russian image or image of Russia better, more powerful, more, you know, conservative and so on. But anyway, more original maybe, yeah?
certainly been original.
Yes. So if we speak about conservatism, yes, it's all about being original, yeah,
right.
Being, you know, in some sense. So we don't know, and even I think even Putin and his aides, they don't know what they're doing, because they worsened the situation with this, you know, outside propaganda and so on. RIA Novosti was a very, in some limitations, a very professional, you know, media organization. Yeah, I came across several times with the people from, you know, Voice of Russia, English radio, and so on. All of them, they were, you know, quite normal and so on. And they all, what they're going to do with all of them, all of these people, you know, to sack them. So it's impossible to hire, you know, thousands and thousands of new people to do this work. But there are no such, you know, numbers of professionals in Russia. Even
I don't think they need professionals for what they have in mind.
Right, absolutely.
And in this case, they, you know, will fail in months. In months, during, you know, say, Olympic Games, they will fail if they will not
hire. RIA Novosti was the authorized news agency to cover the Olympic Olympic Games from the Russian side. So that's interesting. But one has to wonder, because under Medvedev and even probably before that, but this was very noticeable under Medvedev, RIA Novosti did try to be a respectable news organization, and it was presented because it was for the outside. It was basically presenting Russia to the outside world in a lot of ways. Now, putting somebody like Kislyov in charge of the conglomerate that's going to be replacing this, it tells me that they want to put a very different face to the outside world than they had been putting before. Would you agree?
It could be, but I'm more interested in, you know, two other questions. First of all, it's all about, you know, social and cultural situation now in Russian elite. Now Putin is betting on, you know, I'm very sorry for this word, he's betting on media freaks.
Media freaks? Please explain yourself.
Yes, yes. Dmitry Kiselyov, he is not, you know, a well-established, well-known, and, you know, respectable journalist.
Well, he's been around for a long time. I mean, yes, he's been an anchor since the 99, so he's got a following. He's got a weekly news program that people watch, and he has some kind of influence, not just in Russia, I might add, but in much of the former Soviet Union. If you talk to our colleagues from Armenia and other places that get Russian television there, they all know who Kiselyov is.
It's all in past, firstly. Secondly, the position now of Dmitry Kiselyov is not of a journalist. He's a media manager.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He never been media manager, mm-hmm. by the way.
That's true.
And he's not, you know, he was not elected as a, you know, a face of a new Russian propaganda for, you know, outside world. He was elected as a media manager who must reconstruct all this, you know, organization for some, you know, new tasks.
And one would assume he's going to have a zamestitel or a первый zamеститель that'll be able to take care of all the details of managing the thing. But he's going to set the ideological tone, and we get a pretty good idea of what kind of ideological tone he's going to set.
Usually, such figures like, you know, Kiselyov and so on, they're used as editors-in-chief in such a media organization, not as a, you know, media managers and so on, directors or, you know, whatever. Firstly. Secondly, of course, in the past, Kiselyov was well-known and maybe even, you know, respected journalist. But for last several years, he became absolutely marginalized, even in Putin's media mainstream. He is not Konstantin Ernst. No. He is not Oleg Dobrodeyev.
No.
He is not, you know, all these people. He is somewhere trying to play, you know, Fox Channel anchorman. Yes, mm-hmm. But
that's
very unsuccessful. Yes, but very unsuccessfully. He was trying and still is trying to play, you know, such sort of conservative play. He's a Russian conservative.
So he's the Russian Glenn Beck or the Russian Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah. But he's not such talented like, you know, all these people you were speaking about. So that's why I am speaking about him as a freak. And I think that it's a common, you know, mainstream, political and social mainstream of Putin 2013. He is now betting on that freaks in any, you know, position, in any, you know, area of his politics. He is trying to put very strange people on a very important positions. And that is very...
And this is seeping into the culture in a lot of different ways. Now, at the outset, we talked about some of the outlandish things that Mr. Kiselyov had said about homosexuals and that their hearts should be burned or buried. I want to read something from the actor Ivan Okhlobistin, the actor, former Russian Orthodox priest, defrocked Russian Orthodox priest, who's an actor on the TV show Interns, which is basically a spinoff of the U.S. show Scrubs. I want to quote from something that we just came over the wires today. "I'd put them all alive in the oven. It's a living danger to my children." This is a famous actor in Russia saying this very publicly. This is seeping.
He's a famous freak in you know, in this culture. So everyone knows that Ivan Okhlobistin, who's here and what he's doing for, you know, decades, for the last decade. So the most, you know, dangerous thing that such people like Okhlobistin, like Kiselyov, like, you know, we can, you know, name some other people, they are becoming part of Putin's mainstream. That is very dangerous.
Nina, what do you think the implications of that for? If people like Akhlabistin and Kislyov are now part of Putin's mainstream, what does that portend?
Well, I mean, that is actually was also my analogy with you said that conservatives in Russia is original, but it's, you know, it's maybe in Russia it's original, but like everything in Russia, it goes a little behind the times. So we already had Fox News. And what were the implications of Fox News, this fair and balanced news at
all
times?
Well, it changed the media landscape in the U.S. That is what the implication was.
That is exactly my point, is that, you know, fair and balanced news that actually speak propaganda truth, so to say, is exactly that. I mean, it changed the media landscape. So in some ways, we can talk about how ridiculous and traditionalist and completely unenlightened these statements are. On the other hand, when this is the face, and I absolutely agree with you, because that's what Putin's idea is. He's presenting that kind of Russia to the world, saying, well, to your democratic agenda, we have our agenda, which speaks to the values. And I do love the fact that the people who speak to the values, like Putin and Kislyov, actually have been divorced. so that really tells you about the values and whatnot. And so we have our own values, and there is the whole half of the world, or whatever part of the world, that is absolutely with us. We don't want that pink people and liberalism and all these other things. And the implications could be quite far-reaching, precisely because it will calcify the whole environment, and Russia would appear as a much greater freak. And I do love Kirill's point that these are media freaks, because as media freaks, they can, like Glenn Beck and all these other people, they can actually hold a lot of sway, especially in the parts of the country that already support Putin, or in parts of the world that may not support some of the Putin international agenda, but do think that homosexualism is a sin, or going protesting is something that is against God and whatnot. So there may be some audience to that. I mean, it is very unfortunate that Russia, being a European country, or at least partially European country, goes that direction, totally sort of eastward ho rather than westward ho, which we would like to think a country should go.
Well, and it's, I mean, part of this is, look, every country is going to have the dividing line between its kind of traditionalist, socially conservative part of society and the more cosmopolitan, progressive part of society. This is normal. And we've been using the U.S. example, but you can find counterexamples in most European countries, if not all European countries, and as well. But the gap seems to be incredibly wide in Russia along this. But I wanted to also, just for the sake of doing it, I want to read from how RIA Novosti, which in fact is still operating, they're not taking this lying down. It's really entertaining to read RIA Novosti right now. I want to read from their report on Okhlobistin's comments today. The last graph of the story says, and I quote, "Prominent television presenter Dmitry Kislyov, who this week was appointed by the Kremlin to head a news agency that is going to replace RIA Novosti, called to burn or bury the hearts of gays that die in car crashes. He did stop short, however, of promoting actually burning gay people alive, as Okhlobistin had done, however." This is a verbatim quote from today's RIA Novosti, this morning, I think that it came over the wire this morning from RIA Novosti. I only saw it in their English version. I wonder if that bit got into the Russian language version. I don't know. But they seem to be fighting back. Another aspect of this I wanted to touch on was that Kislyov's appointment came just one day after he was given a mock Oscar for his so-called coverage of the Ukrainian protests. A reporter was on Maidan Nezalezhnosti in Kyiv reporting from the protests, and a Ukrainian protester came up and interrupted his broadcast and gave him an Oscar and said, "Give this to Kislyov for his, you know, great acting and telling lies about what's going on here." The very next day, Kislyov was appointed to this prominent position. You have to wonder if these things are connected, because Russia tends to have its own little orange counter-revolutions. We discussed this a little bit last week. I mean, after the original Orange Revolution in 2004, we got the Nashi Kremlin pro-Kremlin youth group. We got Surkov's conception of sovereign democracy or managed democracy. We got Surkovism in general really coming fully online after the Orange Revolution. And now, well, for so far, we have Kislyov. Do you see some of this as maybe a reaction to the events in Ukraine? I mean, do you see, we talked about this last week, but I mean, does this ideological kind of manning of the barricades that we're beginning to see now in Russia, do you think this is expedited by what's going on to the south in Ukraine?
I'm sure that part of it is certainly a reaction because that's what Putin's message is that, you know, you protest, you have gay people, you want your rotten debauchery in the West, and we are solidifying our values. But what I know is that actually Kisilov's appointment was not that was actually planned somewhat in advance. So it didn't. It just happened with Oscar. It coincided with Oscar.
Yeah, it was right after the Oscar.
Right, it was right after, and that's. I mean, that kind of God has a sense of humor, I think, in this particular case. So it does reflect certain things. But his appointment was prepared for a while, and the protest has been going on. And Putin, in the last 2 years or whatever, last year, he really has been going full force into creating a monolith in terms of politics, in terms of economics, in terms of the media landscape. And I think this is just one of the consequences of it, which so beautifully coincided with Dmitry Kisilov's appointment. I want to go back to the New York Times, Putin's piece in the New York Times. In some ways, it was already telling us all these things that are going to come because he did set that whole formula of values and how Russia is going to be a certain way versus what the West is or what the West is not. So it's just part of the same process, I think.
But one of the things I have to wonder about, and this is kind of like telegraphs the second half of the program, but with Rossiya Sovodya being primarily aimed at the outside world, this is my understanding right now. This is not something that if you were talking about Voice of Russia, RIA Novosti, RT, these things are aimed at the outside. And you have to wonder, but I think it does reflect the general attitude of what we're going to see being pushed, or we already see being pushed, and we expect to be intensified on the inside. But you have to wonder how effective this is going to be in the outside world in pushing Russia as this bastion of traditional values. Kirill, what do you think?
I think in some, you know, limitations, it could be quite effective and still is. If we speak about Russia Today TV channel, it's quite popular. So I'm not living in the United States, but I heard a lot about that. You know, many people, they watch Russia Today because, as they say, they speak about the things which, you know, CNN and Fox News are not speaking about. But comparing to Dmitry Kisilov, I am returning to my favorite topic. Comparing to Dmitry Kisilov, Margarita Simonyan, she is a very good media manager.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, there are rumors that there was a sort of struggle between a candidacy of Simonyan and Kisilov before, you know, this...
That's interesting.
Uh-huh. Yes. I read a lot of stuff, especially in the social networks and so on, that was such, you know, sort of intrigue there. So it's a question of media management. It's a question of, you know, how many talented people they will hire and so on. But I'm much more interested in another question. You know, it's a question about Russia itself and Russian society and a part of Russian society, such part of Russian society as liberals. For me, all these events around RIA Novosti is a point of no return for a lot of liberal journalists and liberal,
Yeah, we had a conversation about this off mic yesterday, where you said for the liberal Tusovka, this is the point of no return.
Because before this, I know several people who had projects on and cooperation with the RIA Novosti, and all of these people, they're liberals and they are anti-Putin. For instance, the latest project by Gleb Moriv, who is one of the main people in the Kolta.ru website. He had a project of the beginning of Russian Samizdat and Samizdat Press in 1980s and so on. And that was a quite good and interesting project. So from now on, all these things are absolutely impossible, not because of the censorship inside, future censorship inside this Russia Сегодня media company, but everyone will speak to you that, oh, you're working with Dmitry Kiselyov?
Yeah.
It's impossible. So, in some sense, I think Russian society, Russian liberals, Russian opposition must be very grateful for this move. Because that is a real division. There is no more illusions about possibility to work with state television, state media companies, and so on. Stop doing this, and that's all. If you want to be a real opposition, you must be real opposition. Mm-hmm. You can't work with Dmitry Kiselyov as a part-time job after Bolotnaya protests.
Right. No, and I would add that not only have a lot of talented Russians done work with RIA Novosti, a lot of talented foreign journalists with solid pedigrees did work for RIA Novosti. And when you talk to them, they say, look, I'm able to work here just like I was able to work at a Western news agency, because that was what RIA Novosti seemed to be moving toward. And it's certainly not moving there anymore. Nina, any thoughts on this before we move on to the news section?
Just confirm exactly. I mean, I completely agree with Kirill that in some ways all the problem of Putin is of the early years, or some problem of Putin, it was the lid was not completely closed. So in some ways it could have lasted for much, much longer, because when you have real oppression or real suppression, then you do know what your dissidentship is. You know where your samizdat. You know where you need to go. But when the lid is open a little bit, that can kind of all this rot, semi-liberal, semi-sort of that managed democracy, vertical democracy, can last for a really long time. So in one way, Putin actually did us a favor, because there was no more, even those who try to believe that it may go some direction, which hopefully for the future. I remember when Putin was elected, Putin came back, let me put it this way, in 2012, everyone said, oh, now he can afford being a reformer. He's like, right, of course, now he's just going to wake up and become a reformer. But one last point I want to make, that really has been going on for a while. It is a process. Remember when Medinsky was put into minister of culture position, and everybody was sort of shocked because he does talk very much like Dmitry Kiselyov. But it has been that value thing really has been going on for Putin for a long time. He's been trying to say, we are back. Our values of that, 16th century something rather is exactly there. So first it was culture. Then it is media, then it's going to be something else. Right. And there was a fantastic picture on Twitter, with probably going into next section, the picture of the first row listening to Putin's speech on Thursday. And, there was a patriarch, there was a patriarch one in his patriarch hat. And all of a sudden, the whole row was sitting in the patriarch hat. So Russia is going back into that traditional Christian Orthodox value, which are basically fundamentalist religion.
Right. And the mask, with the appointment of Kiselyov, the mask is now off, as you both seem to be saying. Okay, well, in a few moments, we'll shift gears and take a look at a related theme. Vladimir Putin's defense of what he calls Russia's traditional conservative values in his annual State of the Nation speech. I'd like to remind you that you are listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. Joining me on the Skype line from London is co-host Kirill Kobudin, editor of the Moscow-based history and sociology magazine NZ. Also joining us via Skype from New York City is special guest Nina Khrushcheva, professor of international affairs at the New School, whose new latest book, The Lost Khrushchev, A Family Journey into the Gulag of the Russian Mind, will be out next spring. I'd also like to remind you, you can subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes. You can read the Power Vertical blog at rferl.org, and you can follow us on the Twitter at Power Vertical.
We will strive to be leaders who defend international law, national sovereignty, independence, and national identity. And it is absolutely objective and understandable for a country like Russia, with its great history and culture, with centuries of experience, not the so-called tolerance, genderless and infertile, but the joint, the organic life of different peoples within a single unified state.
Vladimir Putin's annual State of the Nation address is always expected to make news. In this year, which came on the 20th anniversary of the adoption of Russia's post-Soviet constitution, was supposed to be no exception. On the eve of the speech, there was no shortage of rumor and speculation, with some media reporting that Putin would use the occasion to abolish the direct election of mayors. This, of course, didn't happen, at least not yet. What did happen was that Putin gave a full-throated defense of what he called Russia's traditional moral values against the West's, quote, mandatory recognition of the equivalence of good and evil, end quote. He derided Western liberalism as, quote, genderless and infertile, end quote, a not-so-subtle reference to LGBT rights. Now, my first reaction to Putin's speech was that this was pretty dull and was filled with all the predictable boilerplate. But upon reflection, I've decided that it was anything but. I've come to call it Putin's December thesis, with apologies to Lenin's April thesis. What we saw, I think, was the clearest articulation yet of Putin's emerging ideological orientation. And he seemed to be trying to take it global, appearing to those who share his traditional values worldwide. So we've come full circle in a sense. During the Cold War, the communist leaders of the Soviet Union attempted to appeal to and co-opt leftist and progressive elements in the capitalist West and in the developing world. What Nikita Khrushchev at the time called the correlation of forces, which would lead to the ultimate victory of communism. Now we have Putin saying Russia is the greatest defender of social conservatism in Russia and in the world, again, which will be victorious against all those sissy feminists and gay rights supporters in the West. Nina, your grandfather coined the term correlation of forces, so the first you get to jump in on this. Are we seeing a new attempt to revive this old doctrine, but just with new packaging?
Okay, I really would like to have Khrushchev out of Putin, if I may, please.
I couldn't avoid it here.
Right, no, I totally get it, but I just would like to because this. I mean, the fact that we're making these comparisons is already.
We're making the comparison already, not between Nikita Khrushchev and Vladimir Putin, but between the Soviet idea of the correlation of forces, which he was the first to kind of articulate.
Oh, no, you don't need to defend yourself from me. I'm just saying. But the fact that we're making those comparisons is already a problem because it has been 60 years and we're still doing the same thing. That is one trouble that we have, that Putin has not moved us forward. So that is one thing. Another thing is that actually during the Cold War, as horrific as the influence of the Soviet Union was in many parts of the world, also it exercised a lot of soft power. It actually built universities, it invited students in, and Putin has done none of it. So in some ways, it's much more that whole coalition of forces ring much more hollow because it is infinitely more of a lecture tour rather than a lecture tour and a bombing tour and also a practical help that the Soviet Union did provide to some countries. So the fact that Putin is, I mean, we talk about propaganda, the fact that Putin is using this language is a very shallow, hollow message because he really hasn't done much to actually exercise the soft power that goes right. with the creation of the traditional values. So, fine. If you think that the Western democratic world is infertile, do something that actually brings Russia to the par of, you know, why students are not coming to study in Moscow anymore. So this is something that we also have to remember, that we may listen, but the problem with today's propaganda is that it cannot just impose values on you. It actually has to meet some sort of the demands. And unless Putin starts softening his power, this is going to die very, very quickly.
Well, one has to wonder if that's going to be the next step in it. We all know Mr. Surkov is Putin's chief advisor on what, Ukraine? And where is the first test dry run of this ideological orientation that Russia is trying to take global? It's Ukraine. What was one of the key initiatives that came from Russia through Medvedchuk, who is a former advisor to former President Leonid Kuchma, who was very close to Vladimir Putin? He financed a propaganda campaign in Ukraine in the run-up to the Vilnius summit, saying basically, if you join Europe, we're going to have gay marriage in Ukraine. It's going to be required of us. So you already had this attempt to apply soft power and to appeal to socially conservative elements in Ukraine, which is right now, you know, where Russia and the West are battling for influence most intensely. And one has to wonder if these soft power elements aren't coming. I scratched my head when I saw that Surkov was appointed as Putin's advisor on Ukraine and Georgia and all of these things at the time. Now I'm beginning to think, maybe there is something behind this. Kirill, what do you think?
Oh, when I'm
don't get all Buddhist on me.
No, I speak about philosophy, just philosophy. Sorry, secular philosophy. When I was listening to Putin's speech, I felt very nostalgic to Soviet Union, of course. When I lived in Soviet Union, I was, of course, anti-Soviet, dissident, whatever, you know, one of the young fathers of the Samizdat in our provincial city and so on. But
a provincial city that had Andrei Dmitrievich Sakharov living in it.
Yes, we never met there. So I was thinking while, you know, listening to this speech that Soviet Union, Soviet, you know, ideology was horrible, of course, but that was a modernist project. It was aimed in, so I'm absolutely agree with Nina, it was aimed in, you know, in the future. It was a futurist, utopian, whatever, but that's all was about future. And now we see that Putin is trying to play, the key word here is to play, you know, a sort of retrospective conservative project. But this is a very postmodernist play. And it's interesting that postmodernism itself is very outdated today in the modern world. Because when he is speaking about, you know, traditional values, conservatism and so on, all these words are in commas. It's a typical postmodernist, thing. When you speak about traditional, speaking about the country which had been destroyed, all the tradition had been destroyed twice in the previous century. Absolutely. When he is speaking about values in the one of the most corrupted countries in the world. When he is speaking about conservatism, but conservatism is all about conservation of something. What he's going to conserve? What sort of values? Pre-revolutionary, Soviet, post-Soviet, or what else? My opinion that not he himself, but you know, some of his aides or you know, some people from his circle. They're trying to make him, you know, a sort of new edition of Nicholas I, or maybe the latest version of Alexander III. Mm. But he doesn't drink. if he wants to play Alexander III, he must drink a lot. And to have, you know, such a figure and a bird and so on. Speaking seriously, he's trying to play Russian conservative Russian czar, who is, you know, from some, you know, German descent,
right.
who is surrounded by foreign bureaucracy and half-foreign aristocracy, who is not very interested in his own, you know, population and his own country, but he is still speaking all these words about traditions, values, and so on, you know, doesn't understanding, you know, the meaning, the very meaning of these traditions and so on. And when we see, I hate all these historical analogies and so on, but when we see what was the result of the Nicholas I politics, that was the Crimean War and a disaster, total disaster. Don't forget that Crimea now is a Ukrainian territory. That's very symbolic. And the very end of Alexander III was the disaster with his son.
Right.
And so I'm not, you know, such optimistic about the end of, you know, this postmodernist conservative political ideological game now in Russia.
And you did there was a very good litany of the hypocrisy and contradictions in all of this. But there is reality and there's perception and ideology is about moving people's hearts and minds. I don't know what I think about this yet, if this is going to be effective or not. But if you think back to the Soviet times, it was very effective for the reasons Nina pointed out in appealing in the developing world and even in the West to leftist elements. One has to wonder if today this message will have a receptive audience in parts of the world, in parts of the developing world, for example, and in some quarters in the West. Nina, no, you're shaking your head.
I don't think so. I mean, I keep going back to sort of the propaganda. The first rule of propaganda to be successful, it actually has to be based on something. And so far, they haven't really, except manipulating the world's oil and gas, they really haven't done much in terms of bringing the world to its side. That's one thing. And another thing, actually, that analogy that Kirill's posed is that, who is here? Nicholas I, Alexander III. I mean, what is really interesting about Putin, right from the beginning, I must say, not so much even now. Remember, he reinstated the Soviet anthem, mm-hmm. and then he brought back or kind of pushed forward the double eagle, and yet there was a red flag that remained in the Russian army. So it was very postmodern project right from the beginning of Putin. He's sort of the typical Russian Kasha of Vladimir Putin, when you have the mixture of everything, thinking that combination, so you take everything from everybody, whatever you think was good, and that will put you forward into the future, doesn't really work this way. You have to have a strategy. And so far, he's shown nothing in terms of strategic thinking. So I don't see how in the developing world, the Putin project is going to work out. Because if you really want to have some influence in the developing world, then go China, because China is very, so far, not entirely always successfully, but still does work out, does lend out a helping hand, although, of course, they're making a lot of money, for example, in Africa. And Putin hasn't done so. He still relies on that on the tribune that the Kremlin seems to occupy, and just speaks out and think that mausoleum podium would be enough to convey the message. So I'm not sure. I really think that even if people are listening, they really don't as seriously or as with as much hope for real development as right. Putin might think they do.
Kirill, what do you think? Is this regime capable of building the infrastructure that could push this kind of traditional conservative ideology, postmodern as it may be, hypocritical as it may be? But could they build the infrastructure like they nothing like they had in the Soviet Union, of course, but could they build the infrastructure to push this farther than just rhetoric?
First of all, of course, there are a lot of conservative hardliners in the modern world, of course. And there are a lot of them in India, in in China, even in the United States or in the European Union and so on. But the question is, what is the importance of Russia as a state, as an economy, as a so on for the modern world? It's not such important. So I'm speaking very, very carefully, yeah? But it's not such important as Putin thinks. In comparison to China, to India, to even to Brazil.
And
so, yes, it's a quiet, small country with quiet, modest economy. And what's the point of following, you know, strange speeches of some strange person who is, you know, a leader of some, maybe, you know, of course they have a nuclear weapons and so on. But anyway, it's not such important like, you know, China, India, as I told you, and so on. First, that is my first point. The second point is that conservatives in all the, you know, in modern world couldn't be a natural allies for Putin's conservatism because, first of all, there are several, you know, sorts of conservatism in modern world, religious conservatism. Mm-hmm. But of course, say, Muslim conservatives, they see Russia and Putin himself as an enemy. They couldn't be an allies for modern Russia. Christian conservatives, especially Catholic, couldn't be, you know, very friendly to Putin because of their relationships, very, very bad between Orthodox Church and Catholic Church. Mm. Well, they're not bad, but they're very cold, yeah? Moreover, if we see, if we look at, you know, of the activity of recent Pope Francis I, he's a real, you know, really, I admire him. He's a real political, not just spiritual, but political leader. And in terms of conservatism, in, you know, traditional values, which are married to very left social views, mm-hmm. He is much more interesting for the population and developing countries and so on than, you know, some sort of, you know, Russian billionaires who playing defenders of traditional values. Putin and all his people, they cannot prove that they are really sincere speaking about traditional values. If you are, you know, a supporter of traditional values, so just give up your wealth. Right. First of all.
No, and it's very interesting that in a year when Pope Francis said that the church has to kind of move away from its fixation on these sexual issues and focus more on its mission, its social mission, it's interesting that you have the president of the Russian Federation picking up these issues. Nina, last word to you before we wrap it up for this week.
Well, and, you know, good for Putin for being late to meet the Pope for 50 minutes. So that told him. It's exactly. I think it's a fake message. It's a message looking into the past rather than into the future. The world is fragmented. And the fact that Putin, in his speech, even for those who may listen to him and may agree on gay gay propaganda, as they call it, or some other traditional values that Putin advocates. Nobody believes Putin when he speaks about international legal issue. Really? That's right. Russia's going to argue for legality? Or when he talks about tolerance. Okay, I'm really glad to know that Russia is a very tolerant country. However, reality tells me otherwise. So in some ways, that message in itself is such a fake and fragmented message that it's very difficult to get the unified audience for it. So good luck to Putin with the unified language and everything else.
All right. Well, on that note, we'll wrap it up. That's all we have time for today. I'd like to remind you, you have been listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. Joining me on the Skype line from London has been co-host Kirill Kobrin, editor of the Moscow-based history and sociology magazine NZ. And also joining us via Skype from New York City has been special guest Nina Khrushcheva, professor of international affairs at the New School, whose latest book, The Lost Khrushchev, A Family Journey into the Gulag of the Russian Mind, will be out next spring. Thank you both for an enlightening and lively discussion.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
I'd also like to thank our brilliantly patient and patiently brilliant producer, Tanya Kancheva, and my totally awesome colleague, Pavel Butorin, proprietor of the totally cool Twitter feed, Russia Police Watch, which you can and should follow at Rus Police Watch. I'd also like to remind you, you can subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes. You can read the Power Vertical blog at rfrl.org, and you can follow us on the Twitter at Power Vertical. Join us again next week. And now, as always, I leave you with the ambient sounds of my favorite socially conscious Russian rapper, Noise MC.